Good morning. This meeting will come to order. Welcome to the July 18th, 2025 regular meeting of the Local Agency Formation Commission. I am Commissioner Jackie Fielder, joined by Commissioner Williams and Commissioner Singh. Madam Clerk, can you please call the roll?
On the call of the roll, Commissioner Williams?
Present.
Williams present. Commissioner Singh?
Present.
Singh present. Commissioner Fielder?
Present.
Fielder present. Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, please call item one.
Item number two is communications. LAFCO is convening hybrid meetings that allow in-person attendance and public comment while still providing remote access and public comment via telephone. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. Those attending in person will be allowed to speak first, and then we will move to our remote call-in line. If you wish to provide public comment remotely, the call-in information is scrolling across the screen. When connected, you will hear the meeting discussions, but you will be muted and in listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, those joining us in person should line up to your speak near the curtains, and those joining us on the telephone should dial *3 to be added to the speaker line. If you're on your telephone, please remember to turn down your television or all listening devices you may be using. You may also submit public comment via email to myself. That's at erica.major@sfgov.org. Or you may also submit your written comments via post to City Hall, 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. If you submit public comment, it will be forwarded to all the commissioners. Madam Chair, that concludes my communications.
Thank you. And our clerk today is Erica Major, so thank you, Madam Clerk. And I'd also like to thank Jamie Echeverry and Jeanette Eganloff at SFGov TV for broadcasting our meeting today. Madam Clerk, please call item three.
Item number three is the approval of the LAFCO minutes from the May 16th, 2025 regular meeting.
Any commissioners have changes to the minutes from May 16th? Seeing no names on the roster, Madam Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Members of the public who would like to speak on item number three, please approach the lectern. Seeing none, if there's any members online that would like to speak, we have Jeanette from SFGov assisting us today, and there are no hands raised.
Thank you. Seeing no public commenters, public comment is closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Moved.
And is there a second?
Second.
All right.
Motion made by Commissioner Williams, seconded by Commissioner Singh. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
And on the motion to approve the May 16th regular meeting minutes, Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Singh?
Aye.
Singh, aye. Commissioner Fielder?
Aye.
Fielder, aye. You have three ayes.
Without objection, the minutes are approved. Madam Clerk, please call item four.
Item number four is the Clean Power SF updates and LAFCO updates on LAFCO and the PUC MOU.
Thank you. All right, so we have a presentation from staff members of SFPUC. Welcome, Firas Abusnesne and Kieran Yater. Firas and Kieran, you have the floor.
Great, thanks. Good morning, commissioners. Yeah, so we'll be providing a Clean Power SF update. Again, my name is Firas Abusnesne. I am the acting resource planning and compliance manager at Power Enterprise. And with me is my colleague, Kieran Yater, who works for the RegLeg team. The agenda is pretty short. We have two items, the Integrated Resources Plan, or the IRP update, and an update on gas decommissioning. So first, I'll talk about the Integrated Resources Plan, and just kind of a brief overview of what that is. So the IRP is an energy resource planning tool to achieve an LSE's multiple goal in a cost-effective manner. The IRP ensures that the LSE is a load-serving entity, which Clean Power SF and Hetch Hetchy Power are. Our plan to procure enough resources to deliver sufficient energy to meet this load, reliability need, greenhouse gas reduction targets, and other policy goals. The state, in addition, requires LSEs such as Clean Power SF to develop these IRPs, and the CPUC administer these programs for CCAs such as Clean Power SF and other CPUC jurisdictional LSEs, which includes IOUs like PG&E and ESPs. and requires them to be submitted in a regular cadence. Since 2020, the cadence was every 2 years. However, last year's was delayed to 2025, and I'll talk about the schedule update later in the presentation. So in 2022, we adopted, so we're going to, in this slide, just briefly recap these results. So in 2022, we analyzed different scenarios and portfolios. Clean Power SF adopted the 90% time coincident portfolio, which plans to deliver 100% renewable or GHG-free energy to meet its load for at least 90% of hours annually by 2030. In addition, the portfolio will not rely on system power purchases from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., when typically fossil gas is, usage is highest to meet system peak. And as we have reported, on an annual basis, Clean Power SF has provided 100% clean power and or GHG-free electricity since 2023, which is 2 years earlier than the target. And then next slide. So for this year's IRP, we're focused on the following goals. So first, identifying a realistic path to maintaining 100% renewable energy supply, providing affordable competitive generation service, meeting reliability standards and complying with California procurement orders, continuing to plan for further electrification, and continuing to support local investment. In this iteration of the IRP, we will focus on balancing these different goals, but we'll have a special focus on affordability, which is becoming a more serious challenge in the current environment. So we also plan to provide a refresh for several assumptions that reflect changing economic conditions and policies. Most importantly, costs of power have increased considerably since the last iteration of the IRP due to several factors, including inflationary pressures, supply chain disruptions, tariffs, and difficulty in interconnecting new resources to the grid. This resulted in significant increases in power prices, which you can see in the chart here on the right. But also, this is going to be further exacerbated by the recent passage of HR 1 and the federal level. I just also want to note that these costs are kind of illustrative estimates and are reflected of national averages rather than California-specific costs, which tend to be higher. But generally, what I'm trying to say here is that affordability is a concern and costs have been rising significantly as the trend seems here, shows here. And lastly, this is the tentative schedule for the 2025 IRP. So originally, the IRP was scheduled to be due on November 1st of last year, but then the CPUC moved it to be due this year. First, it was November 1st, but then they moved it again to now be to be essentially no earlier than December 1st. But we're not actually exactly sure what date will it be due. So the guidelines that we need to conduct our analysis was due to be submitted to us by May of this year, but has been further delayed and now is expected in August. It's still unclear when the submission date will be, but essentially, as I said, it was December 1st. It's going to be earlier. We are prepared to submit the plan by December 1st if needed. But we will also, like, essentially this tentative schedule kind of lists how we'd go about it if it's due in December 1st. And with that, I give it to my colleague, Kieran.
Hello. My name is Kieran Yoder, and I'm here to talk about gas decommissioning. So we're going to start out with an overview of the Climate Action Plan, because that's where a lot of this work really stems from. So the Climate Action Plan is essentially San Francisco's roadmap to net zero emissions by 2040. And the SFPUC has been leading a lot of the update for the energy supply sector of the CAP. The overall goals for the sector are to, first of all, continue offering 100% renewable electricity, which both Clean Power SF and Hitachi Power do as of 2023. But because we only serve about 75% of the load in San Francisco, our next goal is to achieve 100% renewable electricity citywide. And then our final goal in the Climate Action Plan is to transition to 100% renewable energy by transitioning off of fossil fuels for our end uses. And today we're really going to be focusing on strategy 5 of the energy sector, which is to plan for the equitable decommissioning of the city's natural gas system. So the reason why this is included in the Climate Action Plan is as we continue approaching our climate goals and more households electrify, the number of people who are paying into the gas system will decrease. And if the cost of the gas system does not also decrease, those who remain on the gas system will be paying increasing rates. And this could lead to a cycle whereby those who can afford to leave the gas system do, and those who cannot afford the upfront cost of electrification are stuck paying these spiraling rates. So to mitigate this, we want to try to identify pipelines that are due for upcoming repairs or replacements. And rather than investing in that project, we electrify all of the end uses on that pipeline and then decommission the pipeline. And then this can lead to decreasing costs for the overall gas system, and the avoided costs of the project can be reinvested in the upfront cost of the electrification measures. So the largest effort currently underway is the implementation of Senate Bill 1221 at the CPUC, which will establish up to 30 gas decommissioning pilots throughout the state. July 1st of this year, the gas utilities released public maps, which identified foreseeable pipeline replacements for the next 10 years. And these maps will be used to identify priority neighborhood decarbonization zones, which the CPUC is required to establish by January 1st, 2026. And these priority zones will be based on foreseeable gas pipeline replacements, the presence of supportive local governments and organizations, and then also the presence of disadvantaged communities and CPUC environmental social justice communities. And we have already reached out to PG&E to express our interest in hosting a pilot and in being one of these supportive local governments. All pilots, or the pilot program, will be established by July 1st of 2026, and then all projects must be initiated by 2029, the end of 2029. So the SFPUC's role in gas decommissioning is very tied to the work going on at the state level right now. We are actively participating in the CPUC proceeding that is planning for the long-term future of the gas system in California, and is also implementing the pilots. We plan to support any pilot or other gas decommissioning efforts in the city through grid capacity analyses to ensure the feasibility of zonal electrification and that we will be able to serve the additional load. And then also continuing to offer programs that help our customers break up with gas, such as our bill credits program for heat pump water heaters, our all-electric multifamily program, which provides free electrification roadmaps to multifamily affordable housing, our municipal fuel switching pilots, our energy efficiency program, Upgrade for Savings, which is also exploring adding electrification measures, and also continuing to serve as a technical advisor to the city's climate equity hub. And finally, the last two things we're going to be doing are, based on the learnings of these pilots and any other efforts in the city, we will be writing a memo with recommended next steps for gas decommissioning in 2030, and then trying to establish agreements with PG&E for the decommissioning of the city's natural gas system by 2040. And that is all I have. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Colleagues, questions, comments? Commissioner Singh.
Yes, I have two questions, maybe one for each of you. So the first is related to, this is very hard to, it's very hard to anticipate what the federal administration is going to do, but I did see something this week about potentially that the Department of the Interior, or I think it's the Department of the Interior, might be like exercising political veto power over specific solar and wind projects. Is that something you're hearing about, or could that affect the IRP in any way?
Yes. So they're essentially like making permitting harder, especially for transmission, and it's also making it harder on the federal lands. I'm not particularly the expert, so I'm going to come back with more detailed answer. But yes, those are concerns. And essentially the other thing is, which this bill does, is it eliminates the tax credits that these projects depend on unless these projects start pretty soon. So essentially projects that are already kind of in the construction pipeline are not impacted, but contracting for new resources is going to become more difficult. I want to say too that essentially, like, it's not that all resource types have been impacted the same. So wind and solar are much worse impacted than, say, geothermal. So it changes our calculation, and that kind of trying to incorporate all these factors all in together will be part of our IRP exercise. And so it will. So the shape of our kind of portfolio and what it will look like will definitely be impacted by these things. But we are going to take into consideration like the fact that these projects are going to be harder to build and potentially more costly to procure. Of course.
My second question was related to in terms of identifying sort of like vulnerabilities or, you know, like or target areas around gas decommissioning. Like how is the sort of how are you all thinking about or factoring in like multifamily rental housing or rental housing in general? And I'm saying this from a perspective of a renter who has a gas hookup that you would very much like to not have.
Yeah.
But that's very difficult, and a lot of people, especially in vulnerable communities, you have more of a likelihood, unfortunately, that some, not all, but some landlords will take advantage of that renovation process or any kind of upgrades, right? And that makes tenants wary of upgrades, even when they're really necessary, because they're concerned that they'll be displaced.
Yeah. So for these SB 1221 gas decommissioning pilots, it's actually statutorily mandated that it's based on disadvantaged communities based on CalEnviroScreen. So that is a limiting factor, and then ultimately it's up to the CPUC to determine where they locate them, but we are planning on advocating for pilots in San Francisco in the proceeding, and there will be an opportunity for that soon. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Commissioner Williams.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that presentation. It's so thorough. I kind of jumping off of what Commissioner Singh was saying, I'm curious about the priority neighborhoods and the threat of displacement if there were to be some sort of upgrades, which I think has just been top of mind for a lot of tenant advocacy groups. So I'm wondering what kind of collaboration, if any, or outreach, if any, you are doing to talk to these advocacy groups?
Yes. So we are trying to work with SF Environment, who has a lot of connections to different NGOs throughout the city through the Climate Equity Hub, to make sure that people are not going to be displaced from this. And I will say also there are requirements that these are cost effective for the utility. So the overall idea, I think, is for the utility, the gas utility, to be paying for the costs of the electrification, and that it is cost effective compared to the pipeline replacement, and that the overall affordability long term is not going to be negative for the people who are living there.
Do you have an estimate of that cost?
Unfortunately, I do not right now, but yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Commissioner Williams. My question was, how does HR 1 impact the affordability by way of the elimination of the incentives?
Yes, I presume it will, because like we're seeing like prices kind of spiking for generation costs. So like for solar projects, for wind projects, they're definitely spiking, and ultimately that like will affect affordability. Essentially, like there's just no way around it. Like it's going to result in an increase in cost. And I think that the estimates that I've seen are pretty significant. But I haven't done anything specifically for like our particular case. But that is something that we are going to kind of be examining. And that is a question that we will be potentially able to answer. Not like in detail, but we could try and provide some sort of analysis of that.
Thank you. And then with respect to tariffs, is that going to be a part of the IRP?
Yeah, no, for sure. So tariffs are already like it's not a new story for solar and storage, like for battery storage. So they already have been impacting our kind of cost of doing business. So essentially the cost that we are incorporating, part of like that, like a big part of like developing an IRP is and whether it's really useful or not, is getting those costs right. So that's where we spend a lot of our effort, and sort of like, you know, getting data from multiple sources, and we have consultants to help us to kind of analyze these costs. And I can tell you, yeah, tariffs definitely have a significant impact on the cost of battery storage and solar, but also probably for other components too.
Thank you. And then lastly, I don't know if either of you can speak to it, but I'm just wondering what kinds of outreach and by what means is going to be conducted to solicit community feedback for the
IRP? Yeah, for sure. And if you see, like, if I go back to my presentation, so that August and September, conduct communication on IRP scope and scenarios. That is, we have a plan for communication and outreach for stakeholders. We are still working on it. And the reason why I'm not kind of committing on a specific path is because we're definitely going to have a community outreach. We would like to have more community outreach if we have more time. Given that the time is kind of uncertain from the CPUC's perspective, like, we are definitely going to have like an outreach. So we're planning to kind of have an outreach where we solicit feedback and give folks an ability to kind of give us comments and feedback on how we can improve our scenarios. And we also have a plan in October to share our initial results, and there also we'll solicit more feedback. Now, we can't commit to anything right now without knowing when the IRP is due, but if it's due later, we plan to have even more extensive kind of outreach plan. But yeah, that's definitely a big, big part of the IRP is soliciting the feedback from different groups, so we can incorporate their interests and their feedback, and essentially we can develop a plan that works for not just for cost basis, but also like the basis of like feedback from the community.
Thank you. Yeah, I would say in the past 6 or so years, there's been a lot of people, a lot of organizations kind of building up their ranks and have a lot more people interested mm-hmm. in this kind of analysis. And I would say a good partner might be the Department of Environment, depending on their capacity. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, there's existing relationships with community groups that I think would be interested in this. So hope that they can be involved.
For sure. Yeah. No, we'll definitely, like, our communication team is on this, and they will. I will definitely tell them that, you know, to reach out to the Department of Environment too.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. Commissioner Williams.
Me again. Hi. Yeah, I love a good town hall and asking every supervisor to host one for you. I'd also recommend reaching out to SF Anti-Displacement Coalition. They're the umbrella coalition for a majority of the tenants' rights groups, housing rights advocates in the city. You're going to get a lot of good feedback from them. I'm wondering about the priority neighborhoods. Which ones in particular would you be wanting the pilot to live in?
So if I can...
Oh, yeah, the map. This. I was like,
yes, the
oh,
map
I'm
is.
Seeing... I'm like, oh, District 6. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So if you look at the map, the yellow is disadvantaged communities, and all of the, like, blue, like, cross-hatching is the locations, the census tracts where there is a foreseeable gas pipeline replacement in the next 10 years. So based on that, the most likely place would be in the Bayview, down in that southeast corner. And then the other place is that census tract in Soma there. So those would be the most likely places.
And those disadvantaged communities, that's a state definition and map, correct?
Yeah, that it's based on Cal Enviro screen. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both for the presentation. Appreciate you coming before us. All right. So we can now open this up for public comment, Madam Clerk.
There's one more part of this item.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Call it summary.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have a PowerPoint. Thank you. This is just a final update about the LAFCO SFPUC MOU. So just as a reminder, on February 21st, 2025, SFPUC sent a memo informing LAFCO that PUC does not plan to carry forward the remaining balance for LAFCO projects into the next fiscal year, which started a couple weeks ago. LAFCO commissioners engaged with PUC commissioners and management, and the PUC has confirmed that they are terminating the MOU. The MOU officially ended on June 30th of this year. SFPUC will include in its regular updates to this commission updates on SFPUC's natural decommissioning work, as we heard today, that is part of their portion of the climate action plan.
Commissioner Williams.
Could you break down the implications of them not, of them breaking up with us, essentially?
Absolutely. So this MOU was the funding we used to do the studies that were part of our work plan. The two studies that we discussed with this commission was the natural gas decommissioning, the equitable natural gas decommissioning study, which we will no longer be doing. The other one was the green bank financing study, which would have looked at how a San Francisco green bank could benefit clean power SF ratepayers. We will not be doing those two studies any longer.
I can provide some more clarity. I was disappointed with seeing this MOU being pulled. Talked to, as a general manager of the PUC, Dennis Herrera, you know, conversations about the natural gas decommissioning work that's already going on. So those were one of the studies in the MOU. The Green Bank financing study, this was a study that I specifically advocated for 2 years ago, and we did not get it off the ground. That said, I do think that there is work coming before the Board of Supervisors soon. I myself am pushing, going to continue to push for progress on the Green Bank, and I don't think this is the end-all, be-all of a Green Bank conversation. Hoping to see in the SF Climate Action Plan an update on Green Bank and its role in fulfilling our climate action goals. So while I was very disappointed that this is not going to be carried forward with the support of SFPUC, I do think that there's other ways to bring it forward. So any other questions, comments? All right, thank you, Mr. Summer. And now we can open this item up for public comment, Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak on item number 4? Seeing none, we'll go to our remote public call-in line. We have 0 callers in queue.
Thank you. Seeing no public commenters, public comment is now closed. And we do not need to take action on this matter. So, Madam Clerk, please call item number 5.
Item number 5 is the LAFCO Executive Officer Recruitment.
And for this, we have been informed that the recruitment process is in the works, and we will entertain this matter at the September LAFCO meeting. Any questions, comments, commissioners? Seeing no one on the roster, Madam Clerk, let's open this for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak on item number 5 today? Seeing none, we'll move to our remote call-in line. We have 0 callers in the queue.
All right, no public commenters. Public comment is now closed. And Madam Clerk, please call item 6.
And would you like to make a motion on item number 5 to continue it to the September 19th date?
Yes, apologies. I move to continue this item to the September LAFCO meeting.
And is there a second?
Second.
Commissioner Williams. And on that motion, Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Singh?
Aye.
Singh, aye. Commissioner Fielder?
Aye.
Fielder, aye. You have 3 ayes.
Thank you. The motion passes. Madam Clerk, please call item 6.
Item 6 is the Acting Executive Officer of the Midtown Officer Report on the Midtown Park Apartment Study and the Municipal Housing Study.
Thank you. All right. Welcome back, Acting Executive Officer Khalid Samurai. We have a presentation on the Midtown Apartment and Municipal Housing Study. Thank you for joining us again. You have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Before I jump into those two updates, I just wanted to provide a brief update on the LAFCO budget. So at our Last meeting, we requested $408,630, which was the statutory amount. There was a slight upward adjustment after all the final budget documents were released in June. And the amount LAFCO received was $409,397 for a difference of $767. And I can explain why that happened and happens every year if you guys would like.
Please do.
Okay. So LAFCO adopts its budget in May, and we are required to do so by California Government Code Section 5638. We have to adopt a proposed budget by May 1st and a final budget by June 15th. Our meetings occur on odd-numbered months, so we pass our final budget in May before the final budget information for the entire city was released June 1st. Because LAFCO approves its budget in May before the final salary and benefit rates become available to departments in June when the mayor submits the mayor's proposed budget, the approved LAFCO budget on May 16th used the salary and fringe benefit costs that were available to departments at the time the budget was prepared. These costs do not include the updates to salary and fringe benefit costs that are annually entered into, by the controller and the mayor in the spring, because we don't have access to those until June 1st. Therefore, the approved LAFCO budget for fiscal year 25-26 that was you guys voted on May 16th provided sufficient funding to cover either contingency, should it be more or less. This year it was more by $700.
Thank you. Do we need to adopt another budget?
We do not.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Commissioners, questions, comments? All right.
Okay. So moving on to Midtown Park Apartments, SFGov, I have a PowerPoint for this. We didn't really have a lot of time at the May meeting to give this update, so I just wanted to close this matter out before the commission. As you all know, LAFCO conducted a study on the Midtown Park Apartments last year. We held a final meeting on April 19th of this year with the LAFCO consulting team for the Midtown Apartments study. Also in attendance was Supervisor Mahmoud, who represents District 5, MOHC Director Adams, LAFCO staff, and Midtown residents. This meeting concluded LAFCO's work on the Midtown Park Apartments study. It was our last commitment, and there will be no further updates on Midtown to this commission unless you request us to do more work. At this meeting, MOHCD gave a commitment to provide a written no displacement and right of return memo to residents, and MOHCD also committed to share updates about the status of the Midtown Park Apartments construction and upgrade efforts with residents on a regular basis. And that's it for Midtown. Any questions on Midtown?
Commissioner Williams.
For the commitment to promise not to displace people, is there kind of like a time cap that they're putting on that, or is that in perpetuity? What's the...
The way it was presented was that any resident at right now would not be displaced through this renovation project. And any resident who had to move temporarily while their apartment or building is being renovated would get to move back into that same apartment unless they decide to move into a different apartment. For example, if they're an older resident and they want a lower floor than they had previously. Just as a note, I don't know how legally binding this document from MOHCD will be should a future administration or future director of MOHCD decide not to follow through.
Fine. Thanks.
Commissioner Singh.
Yeah, very quick follow-up question to that. Do you know if the, and we can ask MOHCD as well, they should be able to answer this question. In the case that someone has to be displaced for the renovations, right, that right to return, is that time bound, like, you know, that it will be within a certain time period that you'll be able to return, or did they not specify that?
They didn't specify. Some construction for, like, some of the buildings might take up to a year, so I guess the idea is this would be an unlimited right of return should this resident choose to come back.
Okay, thank you.
Seeing no one else on the roster.
I have one more PowerPoint.
Please go ahead.
SFGov TV, one more PowerPoint slide. Thank you. I wanted to provide the commission an update on our municipal housing agency study. As a reminder, as part of LAFCO's fiscal year 25-26 work plan, which just started, we are planning on conducting a study on municipal housing services, specifically to determine the recommended structure of a municipal housing agency in San Francisco to create and manage cross-subsidy mixed-income city-owned housing. The commission has already authorized LAFCO staff to issue an RFP. We're not requesting any action from the commission today. This is just an update to let the commission know that we, although we issued the RFP twice last year, we did not get, we decided not to award a contract and issued a notice of no award for both issuances of the RFP. And there's more information on LAFCO's website about that. Since then, the budget and legislative analyst has written a report on the financial viability of municipal housing, which will now inform the third issuance of the LAFCO study. And we plan on doing that sometime this fall.
Commissioner Williams.
Sorry, I hadn't yet had a chance to look at the website to review why those two that were submitted were not qualified, for lack of a better term. But yeah, really curious about that. And then in terms of social housing, I can say that it's been really exciting to see such a huge movement in the state and so many organizations coalescing. I think at one point during a call with the coalition, there were about 300 people on that call throughout the state. So just, yeah, thank you for holding this and moving this forward, but curious about the two.
Absolutely. So LAFCO has absolute discretion to issue a contract when it issues an RFP. We're not commenting on any of the firms who applies ability to conduct this study. We just chose not to award a contract to any of the applicants for both issuances of the RFP. However, the difference between the first, second RFP was more clarity in what we were looking for. The first one left some ambiguity that was not responded to in the applicant's proposals, and the second one as well. And so this third issuance will remove those ambiguities to clarify exactly what LAFCO wants. And hopefully those same firms will apply again.
Commissioner Williams. Singh.
All good. Yeah, I think just wanted to provide to like a quick update in terms of there is a state level, hopefully, version of this going on. When I say hopefully, the scope is still kind of being determined, right? But I would be very surprised if it didn't. This is set forth by Senate Bill 555, which was passed in 2023, for California HCD to be studying this. And I do think there's a strong chance, again, I'm not in charge of it, but there's a strong chance that the kind of agency capacity, et cetera, that we're kind of exploring potentially in this local study based off of the BLA report, that there's going to be overlap between this and the state level process, which is due at the very end of 2026, I believe. We are halfway through that process. So I don't know. I mean, maybe that will improve the fortunes of RFP round three, but I did want to give a quick update on that.
Thank you for that update. And we can make sure in the RFP and the study itself that we investigate both scenarios, one where the state does take action and one where the state does not, and only San Francisco would take action.
Thank you. All right, seeing no one else on the roster, thank you, Executive Officer Samurai. And we can now open this item for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on item number 6? Seeing none, we will move to a remote call-in line. We have 0 callers in the queue.
Seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, no action is needed on this item. Madam Clerk, please call item number 7.
Item number 7 is general public comment. Members of the public may address the commission on matters that are within their jurisdiction and not on today's agenda. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak? Seeing none in the chamber, we will move to the call-in line. We have 0 callers in the queue.
Seeing no public commenters, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, please call item number 8.
Item number 8 is future agenda items.
All right, do any commissioners or does the acting executive officer have any matters they'd like to discuss on future agenda items? Seeing no names on the roster, Madam Clerk, let's open this for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on item number 8? Seeing none in the chamber, we are moving to the remote call-in line. We have 0 callers in the queue, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed. Madam Clerk, is there any other business before us today?
There's no further business.
There being no further business, we are adjourned.